can't get enough of the fan in the morning?
Shown up.
Because this is nothing like that.
Working.
Al and Jerry are here with stories they'd never get to cover on the morning show.
Very sexy robot.
Hey, look at that pig.
Shenanigans.
Naked yoga.
My mother had a bad experience with these goats.
Let's hump the fence.
It's Al and Jerry's post-game podcast.
All right, the way we go on a podcast, Al is on his cruise, so he remains out. Mike Fliegelman, the host of today. What's up, Mike?
What's going on here?
So I asked you to write down callers and radio and all that from earlier. And I had this thought as I do the 5 o'clock hour, which I actually enjoy from time to time. But also when I, you know, host on the morning show from 6 to 10, and when I listen to this radio station, depending upon the show and the time, you get flooded with phone calls or you get none. And as someone like yourself, I listened to McMonagle this morning drive in. It was pretty obvious that there were no calls on hold, like at all. And at one point he's like, he said something along the lines of, we'll take your calls. And if you don't call, we won't take your calls. I mean, you know, whatever. And so it made me think back to when I first started here in 97, and then I started working overnight with Joe, and it would just be, the phone lines would be flooded. From 12:55, he'd come on at 1. I'd start putting the calls on hold unless we had a guest at 1:20, which was a lot, but not all the time. And those phone lines would be just hammering home until 5 o'clock in the morning. And then sometimes it'd be a little slow in that 5 o'clock hour because he would go on until Imus at 5:20 and then sometimes wouldn't take a call because he'd redo the monologue or whatever. As you've done this overnight now for a couple of years, have you seen a decline in the calls? And I ask from the standpoint of, is our caller, I don't think our audience is shrinking. Is our caller audience dying?
So I think it is. I've seen a sharp decline. And like it began with, like I have to separate it because I took over the overnight full time 2017.
Okay.
Up until early 2020,
pandemic,
there was no change.
Yeah. Right.
When COVID hit in the first couple of weeks, there were a lot of calls. Everybody stuck home. We were doing kind of the nostalgia-themed shows with JJ. That's how we got through the first couple weeks.
That's right. It was JJ then.
Then in May of that, when you guys got the hour-long warm-up show, that was the same day that it switched to JJ went to nights, and Steve began doing the overnight. Stayed that way until baseball came back. Like, the calls came back when sports came back, but I could definitely tell it wasn't, like, the same. Where, like you said, the lights used to be going off all
constantly.
Night long. Like, the calls were flooded. One line would vacate and another caller would pop right up. And that was true for not all the time, but 80-90% of the time, like callers were always calling in. You'd have a lot of repeat callers. You had the same people, 3:45, this guy calls in, 4:12, this guy calls in. But as like the years went on and we started to get everything else back post COVID, the callers, at least in the overnight, never really got back to where they were before. Like, we still have regulars, and there are topics where, you know, if there's big news, you'll have a lot of the first-time callers, or if there's a big topic, guys will call in. But, yeah, it has not been the same since really when everybody else started to dig out of the pandemic.
For me, being here as long as I've been here, the one trigger used to be, and it would work like a charm, hey, we've got an open line. And that would, even if you hadn't, four open lines or five, you would say, hey, I've got open line, here's the number, and the phone would light up and you'd be good the rest of the night. And I had a big gap in doing shows. I did a lot of shows starting in 2004 until about 2006 when I had enough of it. People don't believe me when I say that, but that is a fact, and you can always go check with my old bosses. I just didn't like doing it. So I went from like 06 up until, God almighty, I did some Super Bowl shows when we were away, which I never minded doing those. Those were fun. But aside from those little Super Bowl shows, I went from like 06, maybe even 07, all the way until when I started doing it with Al. Now, that's not true. When Craig got arrested, actually. When I was kind of, I don't want to say forced, but thrown in.
Thrust in.
I went a solid 10 years without doing any shows. But, you know, when I used to do them, it was like the formula was so easy. Come on, give a thought, give 10, 12, 13 minutes, go to break, hit the update, come back, usually with a guest, and then you knew you had calls in the back segment, and then maybe another topic and more calls. Now it's like you do these shows, you bring up a topic, whether it's controversial or not, and you're just staring at like empty phone lines, and it's like, damn.
No, and that used to be a
different
joke around here, like, oh, well, anybody could do a show because you have all the spots,
yeah,
the three updates an hour, and there's always calls. And that has really changed. I mean, the person who C-Mac is living through it right now, the person who realized that changed the most when he took over the overnight was Sal.
Sal.
And like it kind of had just started to go that way. So he was used to a much different kind of scene when he did the overnight. And he would say it worked a lot. You're right. Putting out the clear bat signal of, hey, we have open lines. That usually will get people to call because they think, not only can I call in, I think part of it is the patience of people used to be willing to sit on hold
for an hour,
20, 25 minutes, an hour.
Longer.
That's got people call up now. And what number am I in the queue? We don't give that out. How long? Like, well, it's live radio. I don't know how long. Mm-hmm. That's
the patience. We don't have it.
Right. So I think that's part of it. Because like you said, the audience is still there. We get a lot of engagement now. And this happens just when I've hosted, when I produce too. Like C-Mac and I will get a tweet. Sal and I used to get it. That people will just hear what is said and they'll react on Twitter. Like they'll just send us what they want to say. And that can work at times. You can mix it in. But obviously you want that other voice, if it's a solo host, to go back and forth with. So I think the lack of patience that people have is one of, if not the biggest reasons, that the calls have dropped off.
I also noticed, too, and this is an observation, not only from our station, but even like I'll listen to, there's a guy on 770. I'm blanking out on his name right now. I think he's Frank Morano is his name. I think he's very good. And while he's on a political station, his show isn't really political. He talks about really anything, actually. He's a big Atlantic City guy. So he'll talk about shows that are going on down there, what's happening down there, things in Staten Island where I think he lives, maybe Long Island, I forget. So it's and he's syndicated too. So it's really not a political show on a political station. It's more just an every guy's type of show, every person's type of show. I notice on his show as well, the callers are old. Like, I don't know how many 20-year-olds are calling this radio station or 30-year-olds. It's like listening to C-Mac today, I heard four calls coming in. I would say all four were 70 and it's between 70 and 90 years old.
No, it's fair. And like we do, there are a couple of young guys who call in, and every time when I answer and I hear it almost like is a shock to the system.
Yeah.
Because you're right. And I don't know that, like, I've always thought the patience kind of plays in with that. I mean, you have kids that are in that teenager age group, how, you know, they're always stimulated by the phone, they're distracted, this and that. I think these people love to talk sports, they love to have the conversation. I know Pete and Evan do it with the Rico Bronya. I know JJ and The Ringer does it with Spotify. Both, he has Twitter spaces where people can just jump on live. They know they're going to get on in the moment, or they send the voicemail. Mm-hmm. That's what Pete and Evan do with the Rico. They still want to have the conversation. They want to get their stuff out there, but they don't want to sit on, even if they're listening, which is the weird part. Even if, hey, I'm going to listen to this show for the next hour.
Right.
I don't think they just want to sit there, and maybe it's holding the phone, which we know young people are almost allergic to. Like, I'm thankful. I just kind of, like, I'm in still the age group where that was normal for me growing up, having a phone conversation.
Right.
Like, so I'm used to that. I can do it for a while. I don't think they want to do that. They still, that's why they tweet. They want to engage with you. They want to have, hey, ask Chris this. What do you think about this trade for the Yankees? They want the back and forth. They just don't want to really put in the time, even if it's like, hey, we have open lines. Call now. Sit through the break. You'll get on in the next five to 10 minutes. Most likely. We can't promise it. Again, it's live radio. Anything can happen. They don't even want to do that. They're listening. They're locked in. This station is still very popular. We have all sorts of engagement with stuff digitally.
Sure.
They're still listening.
It's just
different.
They're
just not calling.
It's just very different. And you know, now I've got a few, I guess I got 2 or 3 weeks of shows I got to do now in August with the guys being off. And it's, you know, I do a different show. I don't do what they do because I'm not them. It's more of a sports show, obviously. But it really takes away when you're trying to plan it in that, you know, when you're looking for or looking forward to some engagement and some calls, one segment an hour, and there's just nothing there. It's like, all right, well, I guess I got to talk about something else now, you know, which is fine. And, you know, that's why we try to have some fun and do some different things. But I always send the rundown to TV so they can be ready. It doesn't always go according to plan, but I'll always put in the final segment calls or. And a lot of times, the or is what we end up doing.
We almost have to announce, like, you know, we run all the promos about what's coming up on the station. So going into break, we have to do a, like, hey, Jerry Recco is hosting the morning show coming up this next week. You're no longer prohibited from calling in to talk sports between 6 and 10. Like, if we're in that, like, today, this used to be a day where it's trade deadline, or tomorrow especially.
Big day.
Calls, reaction. Sal's doing the midday show right now. I'm sure he has a bunch of calls on the board.
That's the one show that still gets a ton of calls.
Right.
There's no doubt.
I think it's part that the callers are used to it. We almost have to give them that warning, that bad signal of, hey, these days when Jerry is in and he's hosting, call in and talk sports with you and whoever you're hosting with.
Maybe. So I thought that was very interesting, especially someone that's in that control room all the time. What do you have for me today?
So after we wrap this up and it's all posted and everything, Zoo and I today, along with a caller, Eric and Rock Honkamo, you listen overnight, so I'm sure you know him. We are doing something we've done a bunch of times before, meeting up in the city to go see the latest Marvel movie. This time it's Deadpool and Wolverine. So like we're into it. Eric, I know, not dresses up in costume, but he's been a fan forever. Like before any of this stuff, before the nerd culture was cool, he's been a fan of it a long time. Zoo and I both big fans. So he'll have like a themed shirt with the characters. And Zoo and I just go because we're into it. We love the movies. Is there anything you have that, you know, almost the kind of feverish sports fandom crosses over into? Because I have it with obviously my sports teams. I have it with these movies. I have it, everybody knows I have it with Taylor Swift. I have it with other music. I'm wearing the Who shirt, go to the concerts. Is there anything that you have that kind of just
play golf?
Like,
that's it.
So it's, there's so many people, and I don't get the golf thing.
Well, and for me, it was, I didn't either. I didn't start playing golf until my, as I think I told you yesterday or someone yesterday, it was Rascona. I didn't start playing golf until I was 18 or 19 until I realized my freshman year of college baseball that I was not going to be a pro. Not that I ever thought I was, but I realized I was going to be a bench player. What was I wasting my time for? So I stopped playing baseball my freshman year of college, and my dad had just started playing golf a couple years prior, so I picked up the sport, and I loved it pretty quickly. Maybe not the first time. I kind of like my kids. I brought my kids every year. I would go. So when my older son was born in 04, at that point, I was playing 4 to 5 times a week. He was born in October of 04. I think I played once in 0, for real. I think I played one time in 05, then did not play a round of golf until like 2010 or 2011. My younger son was born in 2010. I started bringing them with my dad when my youngest was like 3 because he could swing a club and whatever. But you take him out on these small little courses. Wouldn't matter. We were playing real golf. They never really picked up on it. It wasn't until a couple of years ago that my older son finished his high school baseball career and started playing golf with his friends where he asked me to start playing. So I'm like, yeah, I mean, I've been waiting for you guys. We started playing each week and I got the bug again. And so did they. So I would have to answer golf. If I could see you not getting it or getting into it, but when you do, it's hard to get out of it.
Well, so
that
like we
would
have,
be it for me.
We make these plans, like, you know, when a movie's about to come out, obviously we're, you know, amped up, like that excitement builds for it, like this next big thing that you have on your calendar. So a tea time can, with the
golf
a certain
trip.
Group, that, well, the trip especially.
Yeah,
that
like
can,
we took my younger son graduated 8th grade, so instead of having a party or doing something crazy, we took him to Arizona for 4 days of golf. And I will tell you, I was as excited for that trip as any trip I've been excited for. They were really into it. My wife, while she doesn't play, was looking forward to the pool and just the time away. And then we did another trip with my dad and my mom just last week to PGA Village, where it was really a golf trip. I couldn't wait to get up to go play. I mean, it would be that and just traveling in general. I love traveling, whether it's seeing stadiums, going to concerts. And I don't mean concerts around here. I mean like traveling to see shows and stuff. But other than that, I don't really have time for much else. You know, I mean, I'm still coaching. I still have 3 jobs. So I would say the golf has been that. And because of my older son being into it now, I have someone always to go, like, go. I'm not by myself. I could play with my dad once in a while, sure. But I've always got someone to go with. And we play literally now end of February until the clubs close. At the end of November.
That part I can relate to because it's funny. Like, obviously, big sports fan, been sharing that with my dad and other people my entire life, but mainly my dad. Like the comic book stuff, I was into as a kid. I liked the shows, but just never met that person, even in school, who was also into it. Didn't have that person to share it with. When I went to college, found that group, like, found that friend. Actually, later high school days, he just didn't go to the same school. Oh, you'll remember this friend, the one who we had with Al, the misheard neurologist, urologist. So that later in high school, but like finding that community, and you have now like the, so like that shared excitement, like going to like Eric and Zoo and I have been planning this for weeks to try to figure out, okay, this is the day we're all free. This is the show time. So you can understand that because this used to be the kind of thing where, you know, Comic-Con was last week and people used to look at that and be like, what are these losers doing? This is insane. You have 6,000 people in the hall to find out that Robert Downey Jr. is coming back to a movie and they're all cheering and going nuts as if they just watched their team score the winning touchdown in a football game.
Well, but I think I would think some of the Comic-Con people will look at this Fanatics thing at the Javits Center and be like, over sports? I mean, I think it's all relative. I mean, you know, some people like certain things. The artsy people think sports are stupid. Sports people think looking at a painting is dumb. I mean, it's all how you're crafted and how you're brought up and what your likes and dislikes are. To me, man, do whatever you want.
See, that's where you and I align. Like, I happen to like a bunch of these things, but I, you know, art, I don't get it at all. But if that's what you like,
do
it. Go for it. Have fun. It's the, we've all grown up in the, like, where, you know, you're getting judged. So I was going to ask you, like, you know, one scale of 1 to 10, how big of losers are we? But you seem like, oh, no, this is cool. You guys are having fun. Go out there and do it.
Don't care. Do I think some of it's goofy? Yeah. When I see adults getting dressed up in costumes, that's not Halloween or a Halloween party. To go see a movie? Yeah, I think that's a bit goofy, but why is that any different than the sports fan that puts a jersey on and a helmet to go watch? You're in costume,
right,
jackass.
And again, even as somebody who is a fan of both of those things, not the dressing up in costume, but I am somebody who I'll go to a baseball game and I'll wear a jersey of my favorite player. So when that realization dawns on you, and for me that kind of didn't happen in my teens, probably happened in my 20s, like, oh yeah, this is the
same
thing.
You're wearing a costume.
It's the same energy, just put in a different, you know, path.
It's more, I would say it's more widely... I don't want to accept it's not the right word. More widely recognized as normal.
That's true. I'll give you another one. Like, I'm not into wrestling at all. That's one thing I just never got into or understood. But I can understand the passion that the fans have for it.
I did, too. I've told Al this story before. When I was a kid, I mean, like him, I loved wrestling. When I was 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, 10 years old. And I think it was my 11th birthday. I'm almost certain it was my 11th birthday. Might have been 10, but I think 11. That my dad got, it was 8 tickets, front row, WWF at the Brendan Byrne Arena, Continental Airlines Arena, whatever you want to call it. I don't remember what it was at the time, but in the Meadowlands, the arena that the Devils and the Nets played in. And we sat front row, and I was allowed to bring, it was me, him, my mom, my brother, my sister wasn't interested, and I could bring 4 friends. It was 8 tickets. And I will never forget how excited we were and how disappointed I was when I saw the punches missing. And you see, now, the you know, hitting guys over the back with a chair was real, and I'm not saying what they weren't doing wasn't physical and hard, but when you see the fake kicks, I was like, what is this? And I never watched after that.
Yeah, I get it.
Really got me.
That first moment of, like, true disappointment with whatever you're into, whatever you love, that could, you know, it's weird, because sports, it's more just, the result is going to do that. I grew up a Mets and a Jets and a Knicks. Like, that disappointment was what greeted me into the world of sports. So, like, I never even had the joy. Like, that's just the – oh, that, I guess that happens to other people growing up in Brooklyn in the 90s, and the Yankees just win every year. The Mets are the Mets.
See, the shame of the Met thing is if you weren't in the same town with the Yankees, you wouldn't feel the same way. You just wouldn't. There's a lot of franchises that either have never won or haven't won in a shitload long time. It's just the way it is. But because you saw and had to live through the 96, 98, 99, 2000 Yankees, the Yankees that were still going to the World Series in 01 and 02, and then, you know, they win it again in 09. Now, they've gone a long time without winning. You know, I'm a Cowboy fan, and people are always like, oh, easy to be a Cowboy fan. No, you know what? It really hasn't been. Because my first recollection of being a Cowboy fan was them losing to the Niners in the championship game, which was heartbreak, losing to the Redskins in the championship game, which was heartbreak, going through in my high school years, 88, 89, 90, then they finally started to turn it around in 91, which was my senior year, and they still weren't any good. 92, 92, 93, 95 were fantastic, but I was through those years. And then since 95, a whole hell of a lot of nothing and some pretty crappy years. Yeah, they're good. They're good now most years, but I don't actually ever feel like they're going to win anything.
And they're not the kind of good enough to win and get people off your backs. Like, you're growing up as a Mets fan in this area, Brooklyn, then Jersey, late 90s, early 2000s. And everybody, you know, just mocking you, the team you were. It's like, oh, it's almost like the South thing with the Mets and the Braves 2 years ago, which sure. I had a front row seat for. Like, what are you getting? Like, I'm not playing. I'm not on the field. I didn't do anything you're like right. that. Like, all right, yeah, my team stinks. Whatever. Like, that's the, like, we're talking about the fandom. The I love people celebrating their teams. That's awesome. You do, like, celebrate yours. Yeah. The rubbing it in the face of somebody else is just something I've never understood. And that first time waiting almost for, as a Mets fan, to have that moment, 04. Because yeah. 01, not as really. It was obviously weird coming off 9/11, and they had just beaten my team a year ago. In 04, when you think this is going to be I am going to live in this forever, you realize, and I'm 13 at the time, throwing it back at somebody. This is not that satisfying.
So you're 13 in 04, so you were born in 91. So you don't, right, so, and I've heard some guys talk about this, you know, not being old enough to realize it. I was, in 86, I was 12, and I was into the Mets. I really was. As a kid, I grew up as a Met fan. I loved Darryl Strawberry, Doc Gooden. Like, I lived through the Mets owning New York. Like, I saw it. The Yankees were irrelevant. The Yankees were almost a joke. I mean, everybody's always like, oh, if George was here. If George was here, he might have blown up this team 16 times. You might not have won as much as you did. George was while he was, what's the right word? He was passionate about winning, but he went about it the wrong way, and he would throw money at the wrong types of guys, and they were a complete and utter disaster. He would go get these free agents that didn't fit in. It was like a show, and they sucked. Like, they really were managers, sometimes three in a season.
Listen, the dynasty happened because George was gone for a while.
Because he was banned and put away. My point is, from like 80, I'm going to say 84 is really when you started to see the turnaround from the Mets. Once they brought up Darryl in 83, you felt like something was coming. 84, they started to get good. You know, you got Hernandez and Carter, it felt right.
85, you have Doc
so
here.
Close. Then 86... they were good, should have been better, actually, but they win it. 87, 88, 89, like, those were good years to where it was a Met town. That's not pie in the sky. That happened. And then because it fell apart on them the way it did, and then the Yankees figured it out, it wasn't the Yankees. They figured it out and won four times in however many years, 5 years.
Yeah, since I've been alive, they haven't had a losing season, which came close last year, but I can still say
and
that.
And then that, exactly.
As long as I've been alive, but if they've I been
remove,
the Yankees.
All right, so I remove the Yankees from the equation. You are a Met fan in this town. You won in 86. You were in the world. Forget the fact that it was the Yankees. You won the pennant in 2000. I know you collapsed with the Phillies, but you had really good seasons there in 2006 and 7. You won the pennant in 15. If the Yankees didn't exist, I don't think you view the Mets the same way people view them. I don't.
You'd view it a little bit better. I would still want to win it. Like, I will always look back on 06s. No, that was the year.
But you're not the Indians.
Right. You're not some of these teams that are completely, or even like a small market team, the Rays. They had those 2 years where they went to the World Series, didn't win it. They're never going to spend. They're never going to match. No. There are teams that are just so bad year after year after year. The Mets don't have that, but they're not. It would be better if you didn't have the Yankees to compare to.
Agreed.
All the time, but it still would not be great. Though I think they have a bright future. The one thing I don't think I will ever have is, well, I think Steve Cohen is a great owner already, will continue to be one, and they'll be one of those teams that's there every year. I don't think it'll ever get to the point of the 80s where it's a Met town, because I don't think the Yankees are ever going anywhere again.
No,
too big.
But if you are better than them each year, you can share this town.
That's true.
You
and listen,
absolutely
if,
can
if
share
you win
town.
two out of three years of World
you
Series, even
kidding.
If they're good, you'll feel almost like the Red Sox. They feel like they own that rivalry. That rivalry feels over because of what happened in 2004 and the titles they've won since.
There's no question. And also, the one thing we forget too, Madoff. I mean, that is...
The Wilpons were just not great, but had good moment owners up until then.
The Wilpons up till that moment spent money. They went out and got prime free agents. I mean, and if anybody doesn't think that that's true, go back and check it.
I would absolutely. But listen, obviously, the 05 offseason, Pedro,
yes.
Beltran,
they weren't
made
afraid
some
to
bad
spend.
Decisions. Of course, you know, I can
they
go on forever.
Do.
They did spend up until Bernie
they
Madoff.
Did.
That changed everything. For a decade.
What was his name? Oh, God, I'm forgetting his name. The left power bat. What was his name? Oh, God damn it. I'm forgetting.
Is this in that run Delgado playing?
Yes, Carlos Delgado. That's who I'm talking about. They had no problem going out and getting him. They had no problem trading for Carlos Beltran. Like, they may, or signing, whatever it was. They made moves. And then Madoff came. And it wasn't just a Met thing. Madoff ripped off thousands of people. And they were duped by it. Now, if you, whatever you believe is up to you, I believe they were absolutely duped by it. And then things just fell off a freaking cliff.
Oh, I don't blame them for that. I blame Bud Selig and the league for
that's
that.
Fine. That's fair. But I just think the Mets are thought of, for various reasons, in ways, you know, I guess self-inflicted in certain cases. In other cases, I don't think it's been their fault. And I really do think the future is I think they are building this the right way. And I think they are building a team that's going to be good for a very long time.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely because they've had just so many nonsense stories. They play in the same town as the Yankees, and there's reasons that they're probably turned into more of a laughing stock than they should be. But it does feel like we are, if we haven't already turned that corner, then we're about to.
I agree. All right, Mike, great job. We'll do this again Thursday. I'll have Zoo tomorrow. So you got to do the see ya on the end. Warm-up show coming up next, me and parts of Mike, and then the big one call. So you can take it away, and I will see you tomorrow.
See ya.
Dude, you got to do better than that.
Yeah, that was bad. Can I just wait until Thursday, or you want one more?
No,
right
gotta,
now?
You got to do it now.
See ya.
All right, better.